This week on The Underdogs, it's Masters Week, and Michael Eaves of ESPN joins us to look at long shot contenders, and then we'll dive deep into the last week of the NBA season and the play-in tournament to come.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog. Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
Then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. I'm Jordan Brenner, your host. Big week this week. We ship Peter Keating off across the pond, and we're replacing him during Masters Week with Michael Eaves of ESPN. You know him from SportsCenter. You know he'll anchor their coverage at Augusta National and also be doing player interviews on Thursday and Friday. Michael, we are so glad to have you with us to preview the Masters this week. Welcome.
I appreciate it, man. What's cracking?
What's cracking is I am so psyched. Always the one of the best weeks of the year, transition right from the NCAA tournament into the Masters. Yeah. I may have been driving down the road the other day playing Augusta by Dave Loggins in my car. I am ready to go. Let me ask you first. This is your eighth year now at Augusta. Does it ever get old? What is it like, you know, being part of this tournament, being on the course? It's a tradition unlike any other, they say.
Yeah. This is my favorite week of the year. This has always been my favorite event, even before I started coming here to cover it. It was always my favorite event. It's not my favorite sport. I'm a golf geek, but basketball is my favorite sport in the NBA specifically. But in terms of one event, it is the Masters. And I think it may be the greatest convergence of excellence and nostalgia. Right? Because it's the one major that is contested the same golf course each and every year. So you have that. And like the tradition that Augusta National Golf Club tries to maintain each year in terms of how the course is run has a lot to do with it. And then you have the greatest players in the world trying to win the first major of the year. And oh, by the way, you also have some of the greatest champions of all time who come back each and every year to be a part of it. So that whole thing to me is what makes it special. And as Scott Van Pelt and I say, it's one of one. There's no other event like the Masters. I mean, the U.S. Open is great. The Open Championship is older. U.S. Open, PGA, like all, they're all, you know, majors, but there's only one Masters. And there's only this one event that stands out for some reason or some of the reasons I mentioned. But yeah, it's been a favorite of mine for a long time. And it never gets old coming here. It doesn't. It just doesn't, man. It's like the kickoff to spring. It's like a kickoff to golf season. And it looks as beautiful this time as it did the last time, if not better. It's just the coolest thing ever, man.
I think you nailed it. And I could talk to you about this stuff for hours, but two things you alluded to that I think are right on. First of all, the fact that it's the same place every year, it's the same music, it's the same, it breeds familiarity. And so everybody feels almost like it's sort of their home course. Like, you know, every hole, it's not, you're getting used to the latest Open course or anything like that. It's just, it feels comfortable. And I think that plays a big part in it. And then you mentioned also the mix of former champions. It's a condensed field, so you don't have as many random players who might get hot for 1 week. It's so the leaderboard's always great. But then some of the coolest things I always love is when an older player makes a run. So I remember going back as far as the spring of 98, I think is the most underreported story, was when Jack made that one last run, and on the final day, I think pulled into second. And I remember being a sophomore in college and turning on the TV. You know, back then you couldn't follow on live streaming or anything like that.
Right.
And I was following on a early internet scoreboard, and so I'd seen that it moved. And I remember turning on the coverage and Jim Nantz saying, "You will not believe what you're about to see." Yeah. Now, retrospect, he wasn't that old because Phil was older last year, but it was it is so cool. The length of a golf career where you can sort of get something going, and you can see where I'm going to segue this in a second, is again, also one of one, right?
Yes. I mean, Tiger Woods had his news availability earlier today, and he kind of talked about it, that this place is special, and the people who have been here in the past, especially the past champion, they just know this golf course very well, and he couldn't put a number on the value of that in terms of how many strokes that is, But he mentioned, you know, Jack being able to win here, Phil contending last year. We even go back to Bernhard Langer a couple of years ago. He was paired with Bryson DeChambeau, the longest hitter in the field, the shortest hitter in the field, and Bernhard Langer beat him by like two or three strokes, right? So it is about this golf course and what it allows, whether it's, you know, someone that can really hit it well or someone who putts it well or someone who was older. Tom Watson has had some really good rounds here as he got up. Fred Couples. Tiger thought today that Fred Couples could make the cut. He said, I think Freddie could definitely make the cut this week. And again, so we're talking about guys in their late 50s and 60s making cuts here and contending. You don't see that in other golf courses. You don't want to see it in other majors for sure. Yep. And we're even Jack at 46 in 1986. 46 was a lot older in 1986 than it is now. Yep. Right, he was way older in terms of, you know, athletes and stuff. But for him to do that, that was amazing because he was 46 years old. No one does that.
The only thing I could think of is the way Tom Watson would make late runs at the later in his career runs at the Open Championship because he just. Yeah. But otherwise, you're 100% right. So let's. It feels trite starting with Tiger asking about Tiger, but we are the underdogs podcast, so it's always fun for us to talk about. Underdog Tiger Woods. He's I think plus 14,000 to win the tournament. Yeah. We obviously haven't seen him play much. Do you have any sense of what he's going to look like out there at all?
No. And no one does. Because like on the driving range, hitting balls, he looks fine. He looks great. He looks like the guy that could go out and contend. But until he starts walking and then hitting those shots under tournament conditions. And even he has said that repeatedly. That's what he cannot duplicate at home, no matter how much he practices. But the issue now is he can't practice as much as he used to because of his body, right? I mean, the last time we saw him here, he looked terrible walking off that golf course on Saturday. It was cold. It was wet. He was limping. And he played six holes. He's like, yeah, I'm not coming back out. I'm done. But the last time we saw him, period, was in L.A. at Riviera. He played six or seven holes that second round. He was sick. Walks off the golf course. We haven't seen him since. Yep. Because you remember, his original plan was to play one tournament a month. Well, that hadn't transpired the way he thought it would. He did say today that now that we're into the major season where you know you got one major for the next 4 months, he's hoping that kicks in. But even he doesn't know. Now, in his heart of hearts, he believes he can win. So that tells you that he's hitting it well enough at home that he thinks he can compete. But until he gets out there, Jordan, and starts walking and hitting those shots, even he doesn't truly know.
Right. And I think we saw in his last victory how much his expertise on this course. Now, look.
Oh, absolutely.
It's still night and day, right? Yes, that was a comeback, but he'd already been playing good golf entering the tournament. But, yeah, I know you said, look, you can't put a number on it, but it is that X factor that he just has a feel for this course the way few ever have.
Well, you know what, Jordan? That year in 2019, there's one number we can put on it, and the number is two. Because he made up two shots on everyone that was in contention on the 12th hole, right? When Brooks Koepka put it in the water in the group in front of him, Molinari put it in the water, and Finau put it in the water with him in their group. He hits it to like 25, 30 feet left of the flag, two putts for par. All those other guys made six or five, pardon me. So he made up two shots right there. So him just realizing that flag on Sunday is not worth it. I don't care where I am in this tournament. I'm going to go right here in the middle of the green and try to make par. That goes to institutional knowledge, but also not getting caught up in the moment and relying on that knowledge to hit the shot that's necessary. And he pulled it off. The question is now, he knows all the shots. Can he execute
them? Yep. All right. So you can go plenty of other places to talk about Scottie Scheffler and Rory and John Rahm and Xander. Okay. Let's move past the top favorite. So there's 12 guys who are plus 3,500 or shorter odds to win this. It's Scheffler, it's McIlroy, Rahm, Schauffele, Brooks Koepka, Hideki Matsuyama, Jordan Spieth, Neiman, Ludwig Åberg. Is it Åberg or Åberg?
It's kind of like, hard. It's like more like an O sound.
Åberg. Okay.
It's more like Åberg, but like, yeah. Right. O.
Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, and Tony Finau. Outside of that 12-person crew, is there anyone you like as maybe a little bit of a longer odds contender to win this thing?
I almost don't want to say his name just because there's like it's almost like an automatic jinx on it.
Okay.
And it's Wyndham Clark. No one's played better golf. Only one person played better golf than Wyndham Clark this year than Scottie Scheffler. And twice Wyndham Clark finished runner up to Scottie at Bay Hill and the Players, or he'd have two wins.
Yep.
But no rookie has played here or won here since 1979. But Wyndham Clark is a little different than Fuzzy Zeller was, you know, back then, because he's already won a U.S. Open.
Yes.
Right? He won,
won me some money that day, by the way.
Right? It was... So he wasn't in the Masters field last year, but he was a he was a major champion last year. And so he comes here already with a major on his resume, but he's never played here. So if he plays well, I do believe he will contend. So if you're looking for a guy maybe finishing your top five, I would not put it past Wyndham Clark at all. But to actually pull it off, you know, and win it on Sunday, I think that'd be really, really hard. Although we have seen Will Zalatoris get really close to winning his rookie year. Sure. Jordan Spieth almost won it his rookie year. So we've had guys contend. If anybody, I could see it being Wyndham Clark. Or maybe Cam Young as well. Like, if Cam Young is going to win his first major, I could see him winning it here. Just because his game, the way he plays, he's long, he gets it out there, he putts well enough, right, that I think he could contend here as well and get his first major. So those are two guys I would lean on right now, I think, that could, outside that top 12 you were talking about, that would have a pretty good chance.
We get fun betting odds on both of them, too. Clark's plus 4,000 to win, plus 750 for top five. Like you said, that might be a nice little bet to make. And Young's even longer, plus 5,000 and plus 900 for a top five. How about sort of arguably the hottest guy in the field right now? Akshay Bhatia, I think he's plus 10,000 to win. You know, there's always sort of a recency bias, right? Like, comes in coming off a tournament win. Does he have the game to make a real run here?
Yes. The way he hits the ball, yes. And he's got way more confidence in his putter now. He switched to a longer putter. He goes broomstick style now. And here's an interesting stat from last week. So he led wire to wire. He did not miss one putt inside of 5 feet. I think he was 52 of 52 inside 5 feet. And if you remember, Denny McCarthy birdied the last seven holes. Akshay had to make a decent length birdie putt on 18 to even force the playoff because Denny was playing so well. And then when he got to the playoff, even though Denny had chunked his ball in the water, he still made the putt for birdie, right? So he's putting it really well. He was in the middle of the fairway. And here's the thing. He's a rookie here too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But 10 years ago, he did compete in the drive, chip, and putt. So he has putted some of the greens here, right? Now, granted, you only get two putts on, I think it's 9 or 18. I think it's a ninth green where they set it up. So he, at least he has more knowledge than Wyndham Clark has, you know, coming here in some regard. But, like, if you told me he finished top 15, I'm like, okay, I could see that. But to contend, not so much.
So it's really interesting. So I actually just turned in an article for The Athletic about 10 minutes before we got on the podcast. And Peter and I don't know if you know their work, in the NCAA tournament, we do this. It was Giant Killers of the ESPN. It's Bracket Breakers of The Athletic. We project NCAA tournament upsets. We have a model. It's very mathematical. So we tried to take some of that and apply it to long shots at the Masters, right? So the framework was trying to find guys who were ranked outside of the top 50 on Data Golf entering the tournament and finished top 10 at the Masters. Okay. Basically, there have been 20 of those guys in the last 10 tournaments. So you're looking at like two a year, which immediately shows you how chalky the Masters tends to be, right? There are not a lot of guys outside of the top 50 vaulting up the leaderboard, but you get about two a year. What's super interesting is you can slice the data any which way. Look at strokes gained. Look at driving distance, putting. Look at how they were playing coming into the tournament. It, in the end, with these guys, it's just so random to figure out who's going to play well for 4 days and above the level they've been playing at to this point in the year. Are there any guys just that you have a feel for? Again, maybe not to win, but maybe a top 10 finish, who were sort of either bigger names who are struggling outside of the top 50, a Cam Smith, or maybe a lesser known player who has something you like to make maybe a top 10 run?
See, I think it kind of goes back to that historical context you just gave there. The guys who play well here typically always play well here, right? And to come out of nowhere and to do it is rare unless you become Will Zalatoris, right? Where, like, no one knew who Will was basically when he contended a couple of years ago. But now – but he did it 2 years in a row where he played really, really well. So now, like, all right, Will is just one of those guys. He's not some fluke guy that came up out of nowhere and contended one time. Danny Willett type thing, He's just that guy. And oh, come to find out, he's contending in other majors as well. Will Zalatoris is just really good, right?
Yep.
But other than that, outside of that, Jordan, I don't know, because I always kind of lean on the guys who play well here. And most of those guys we talk about are the ones who are in that top 12. Like, I still can't believe Xander Schauffele hasn't won here yet, right? Like, and it could happen this week, and I wouldn't be shocked at all. And no one would be, because he plays so well when he comes here. Rory McIlroy plays well, that he has always one bad round typically that kills his chances, but he can also shoot 65 or 64 on Sunday and backdoor a top three, right? Mm-hmm. But he hasn't played Rory well for a while, right? Even last week in Texas, he played great Sunday. Mm-hmm. Friday and Saturday, not so much, right? So is he kind of that guy that hasn't played well as of late that could come in and contend? Absolutely. But he's got demons. He's got to get over that. He's got to, you know, try to finally win here and complete the career Grand Slam. But nah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just too, any other tournament, I'd give you a bam, 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 bam.
Right.
But this spot, not so much. Maybe, oh, how about Sahith Theegala, maybe?
Okay.
Because he hits it so far and he plays fearless. So he may not be overcome by everything that's going on. I'd give you Sahith, but like, he should have won more than he has.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. So he kind of falters on Sundays. Twice in Phoenix, he did that. So, not so much, man.
Well, what's interesting, and the last thing is, last year, three guys outside of the top 50 cracked the top 10. But here are their names. You may recognize them. Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, and Patrick Reed, right? So they were, what do we
they
make
They don't count,
of,
though. They well, don't count.
What do we make? Well, this is the data golf rankings, not the world rankings.
I understand.
So here's the thing.
But still, though, like, because they also haven't played as much. They haven't played as many tournaments, right? So you didn't have as much data, correct?
Right. Guess my question is, what do you make of the LIV guys, especially after the success those guys had last year? Because everyone was sort of like, they haven't played, they haven't competed, blah, blah, blah. And then they did well. At this point, does it even matter in your mind whether guys playing LIV or on the tour?
Last year, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But we're 1 year removed from them playing less golf. Right. So they played less. They played more or less golf. I know it sounds stupid.
No.
Like the year before, they had played, you know, they'd all played a full slate the year before. That's how I feel. They'd all played a full slate. And so then it was just that first, it was only a couple months after not playing a lot. Now they've had a year and a half of not playing a lot. Right. So what is the cumulative effect of that? We won't know until starting Thursday how that plays out. But you're also talking about, when you talk about John Rahm and Brooks Koepka, I don't give a damn. World golf rankings, data net, I don't care about any of that stuff. They're two of the best golfers in the world. There's no question about it. So you kind of throw some of that out, throw that away. Patrick Reed is one here. He knows this place. That's why Phil was able to play so well last year, and that was the only good tournament he played all year, was here, right? So he still hits it long enough, and he knows the place well enough that he can do that. So those guys, yes. But if you're just running off any random guy on LIV, no. Not maybe Joaquin Niemann, because he's played her before as well. Not one, but he's played her before, and he's playing as well. They're for a stretch playing as well as anybody in the world. But just like Burmeister, like no, not just anybody on LIV. Like, I don't expect Tyrrell Hatton to be in the mix this week. I just don't. All due respect, but it's not, and that's not necessarily because of LIV. It's just because of how much golf or how they played coming into the week.
Well, the fun of this is that we can all make our picks, maybe put a couple bucks down on someone here and there. But in the end, there's so much randomness in the golf tournament. And that's
so much, man. And people don't understand how much has to go right for anybody to win a golf tournament. I mean, absolutely right. Whether you're talking about some of the greatest players in the world or somebody who comes out of nowhere and wins it as a fluke, it's so much involved, man. And it matters what time of day you play, if the weather comes in. Brooks Koepka kind of got screwed by that a little bit last year, he will tell you. Again, there's so much involved, way more than any other sport typically.
For sure. Well, look, I know one person who's winning this week, and that's you. Enjoy
true
it.
True that.
Suck it all in. It is. I am jealous beyond belief. Have a great time, and we'll be watching you on TV.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
Underdog. Underdog.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Underdog. Underdog.
We're back, and we soldier on without Peter. I'm really thankful to Michael for joining us, especially because I wouldn't want to spend time with me on a Wednesday morning, especially when I'm in beautiful Augusta. So it takes real commitment. I'm thankful. But shifting gears for a minute, Sarah McCrory, our producer, our wonderful producer, and I were talking, and she made a good point. She's been so wrapped up, Caitlin Clark mania, the men's NCAA tournament, her Rangers, the Yankees, and their 9-2 start, that the NBA has sort of fallen by the wayside. And Sarah, this is the final week of the NBA. I want to focus, look, on one situation, which is the play-in tournament is coming next week after the regular season ends this week. The Western Conference is so stacked toward the bottom. It's a fascinating situation of how it's going to play out. And also for us, from an underdog scenario, all of these teams in contention just to be in the play-in tournament are dangerous teams to actually win the West. So here's where we're at right now. The Suns and the Pelicans right now are tied for 6th and 7th place at 46 and 32. 7th place is in the play-in tournament, 6th is not. So that's a huge race to begin with. A game behind the Sacramento Kings, 45 and 33. The Lakers, 45 and 34. And the Warriors, 43 and 35. So four of those five teams are going to be playing against each other. Sarah, if you don't remember the play-in tournament, 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10. 7 is into the playoffs, 10 is eliminated, and then the loser of 7-8 plays the winner of 9-10 for the last spot. So it's actually, I've really enjoyed the tournament. And just for a little perspective, these teams' records we're talking about would be in the battle for second place in the Eastern Conference. The Bucks are 47 and 31. That's how strong the bottom of the West is. So I'm trying to make heads or tails of this. You know, first of all, it'll be fascinating if the Suns fall back into the play-in tournament. Let's say the Pelicans leapfrog them, okay? You've got three of what many people thought would be the top four teams in the West then in the tournament, right? The Lakers, the Warriors, the Suns. Veteran teams all, superstars. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, on and on and on. But what's really interesting to me is, like, we can nitpick a bunch of these teams and problems they have, but first of all, let's start with the Warriors and the Lakers, the two veteran teams, the two teams that, you know, maybe haven't lived up to expectations for the full season. Well, the Warriors are hot. They've won, I think, 7 of the last 8. And now these teams all play each other. They play the Lakers tonight. They play the Pelicans later in the week. So the question about the Warriors, have they found something? Draymond's back. He's maybe on better behavior. Jackson Davis has given them a lift. Chris Paul played well the other night. It's fascinating to see if this team has the ability to come together in the playoffs. The Lakers also getting it together at the right time. You know, I'm not going to count out LeBron and AD for making one more run. And they've been rolling off some wins. They won 4 in a row, granted not against the best level of competition, but I guess it was 9 out of 10 before losing the Timberwolves the other night. LeBron's still playing at an incredibly high level, shooting beautifully. They have games against the Warriors and Pelicans left. I think either of those teams is still capable of getting on a roll as an underdog and making, say, the conference finals. They also could lose to each other in the playoff game. I've in the play-in tournament. So I've never seen anything like that in the NBA. And I'm hoping this drama will bring fans back in quickly. Look, am I still a little bit skeptical about the Timberwolves and the Thunder? Yeah, I am. Like, prove it to me in the playoffs. And that's, I think, the other interesting part is, like, you may end up with these playoff series, like a 1-8 or a 3-5, where it's almost a toss up. If it's like the Wolves against the Warriors or the Thunder against the Lakers, like that's a really, really interesting betting spot too. And I'm curious what the odds will be, but the team I continue to sort of zero in on and we again we talked about sort of the superstars and their teams, is the Pelicans. They've got to get Brandon Ingram back. Supposedly he will be back by the end of the week. But Zion Williamson, very quietly, I just want to talk about this guy because he is still just 23 years old. And I think people, I don't want to say wrote him off, but turned on him very quickly. All the injuries, the weight, some of the off-court stuff, it seemed like people have moved past him. He is playing fantastic basketball, and he's stayed healthy this year. He's played 66 games already. He's expanding his role. Now he's pretty much playing a point forward. He had 5 block shots the other night. I always thought he would be an impactful defensive player, and it hadn't happened yet, but they put him at the 5 against Phoenix the other night in an 8-point road win without Ingram, and he was fantastic. 29, 10, 7, and 5. I want to see Zion on the big stage this April too. It's time. So I feel like the funny thing is, like, the team that gets overlooked then is the Kings, right? They are young, they're good, but they don't lack that uber star. I love Sabonis. I love Fox. They're not at a LeBron, Durant, Curry level, and they're not what Zion could be. The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter at PeterKeatingNJ and at Jordan Brenner. Tell a friend and subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.